Gopnik concludes part of his own reflection on the role of drink in a terrific meal by writing, "Wine takes us from the world, and coffee restores us to it again. In between, we eat." Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, episode 121, The Grapes of Joy. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
In his book, The Table Comes First, writer Adam Gopnik describes how the restaurant, as we know it in modernity, came into being. Central to the emergence of this institution in France, Gopnik tells us, was the doing away with older rules and regulations regarding the selling of diverse drinks. This, in turn, allowed the restaurant to offer two forms of imbibing that, for Gopnik, are essential to the dining experience, the drinking of wine and of coffee. Gopnik tells us, quote, "Where, before the revolution, the selling and serving of food was bound by archaic rites and rituals, only certain guilds could make breads, others pastries, still others sell tea and coffee. These aristocrats had the monopoly on salt, those on molasses. The revolution deregulated all that and allowed with modest momentousness the neighborhood cafe and soon the ordinary restaurant to sell spirits and caffeine at the same place and time. This helped the restaurant to become what it was and is, first, of course, by encouraging the entrepreneur, but also by mixing up the goods and particularly by mixing up the two liquids of coffee and wine. For modern restaurant cooking is first and foremost a boat that, as in a Saul Steinberg drawing, steams its way downriver from the thousand dreamy islands of alcohol to the wide beckoning current of caffeine, from the stress-busting drink to the reawakening demitasse." And then he adds, "A modern meal is a drama unfolding between the opening drink and the concluding coffee, with the several acts passing between the libations." End quote. What roles do wine and coffee play? Citing Malcolm Gladwell, Gopnik adds that an alcoholic drink, quote, "forces the imbiber's attention ever more narrowly upon what's in front of him. It closes us off and isolates us. That's its odd charm." And then he adds, "Caffeine, on the other hand, is a far-sighted drug. Several sips of café noir, and the sipper feels charged up. The corners of the café gleam, and we look around the room, ready to take on the world again." This is how Gopnik puts it. Now, when we study the role of drink in the Bible, there is, of course, no coffee in the scriptural age. But there is, of course, wine. And the Torah seems both wary about wine's dangers, but also approving of its positive potential. As Gopnik put it, wine closes us off from the world. If that is embraced in order to deny reality, to engage in escapism, then that is not something to be celebrated. We think, for example, of the first instance in which wine appears. Noah, having experienced the destruction of the world, plants a vineyard and ends up sprawled in a stupor. And yet, as I believe I have mentioned in a previous episode, the Bible nevertheless stresses in the Psalms that v'yayin yisamach levav enosh, wine brings joy to the heart of mankind, and it is open, indeed encouraging, of utilizing wine in sacred celebrations, in jubilance, and in joy, so long as one ensures that one does not utilize drink to close out those that are most important. V'samachta b'chagecha, you shall rejoice on your festival, we are told. And the rejoicing, Scripture stresses, is meant to include not only those in your own household that are gathered in Jerusalem, but also those in Jerusalem that include the ger and the atom and the almanah, the stranger, the bereaved, and the Levite who may not have harvest of his own and may need assistance through the bounty of others. As Maimonides puts it, in a slightly different context, the Torah emphasizes the difference between genuine joy and simchat kreso, the joy of one's own stomach. Physical pleasures of life, such as eating, can indeed be sanctified as long as it is utilized to foster fellowship, covenantal connection. It's with this in mind that we can study another mitzvah, which is an addendum to the commandment contemplated yesterday. Parts of the vineyard, we saw, must be left by the farmer for the poor. The Torah, in turn, also in the very same verse, introduces another obligation, one known as feret karmecha. The singular grapes that drop to the ground in the process of harvest must be left for the poor as well. Here we have what appears a perfect parallel to what is called the leket in grain, stalks that drop are gathered by those that do not have, as in the book of Ruth. Yet whereas the latter commandment embodies an ethic that is instinctively obvious, for the grain can be utilized for its sustaining power by those who hunger, it is not quite clear why it is essential that single grapes be given to the poor. The answer, of course, is that, Allah the Psalms, where bread brings satisfaction, grapes in the biblical era were utilized for the creation of joy. A grape here, a grape there, and soon the poor person can also have some wine for celebration. What emerges then is a seemingly small commandment that actually expresses a powerfully profound moral message. When you prepare to rejoice, you must think of others rejoicing, and that essential to life is not only sustenance, but also a source of celebration. Whereas modern literature gave us the grapes of wrath, the Torah gives us the grapes of joy. Joy for yourself, and also for others. Gopnik concludes part of his own reflection on the role of drink in a terrific meal by writing, "Wine takes us from the world, and coffee restores us to it again. In between, we eat." This is his language. Wine does indeed take us, in a certain sense, from the world. Therein lies its power, if utilized wisely, but also its danger. For we must make sure that, in the cocoon created, our moral consciousness does not forget others. Thus, the biblical farmer is reminded that one who prepares to wine and dine must make sure that another person can not only dine, but also have wine. Thus does a sacred scripture that begins with a negative depiction of drunkenness give us in its mitzvot a depiction of wine's positive power. By spreading the grapes of joy, the biblical farmer is able to achieve a religious rejoicing worthy of celebration. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.